aging too. So with your hormones in balance, you can feel great and finally lose the weight. Be one of the first 50 callers right now, and they'll send you a complimentary risk-free trial with a 30-day supply, free. Call 1-800-835-6025. That's 1-800-835-6025. 1-800-835-6025.
Fewer Americans needed new unemployment checks, but the economy not quite as strong as we were first told. Reports out this morning show a lower than expected 364,000 Americans filed for unemployment benefits last week. That's the best since April 2008. But then there's the number that came out on the economy. Over the summer, it grew at a less pace than had been anticipated earlier. 1.8% is the GDP revision lower. On Wall Street, we are seeing the Dow up by 47 points. We're also seeing the price of oil, which dropped to around $93 a barrel just days ago, now back over $99, rising over a half dollar this morning. And the price of gas is up a penny. AAA's average for self-serve regular almost $3.22 a gallon. The NFL making another change, trying to tackle an ongoing concussion problem.
It all stems from a December 8th game on the NFL Network.
Straight drop from McCoy, and now he throws at the last second. Completed it as he got planted, and I mean planted.
A concussed Colt McCoy went to the Cleveland Browns bench, but was never tested for a head injury and went back into the game. He was diagnosed after the game and hasn't practiced or played since. Now the NFL will pay a certified athletic trainer to watch every game live from a replay booth. The trainer will be able to contact medical staffs for both teams to give advice, but will not be able to diagnose an injury, prescribe treatment, or pull a player from a game. Chris Honig, Fox News Radio.
And tonight there is an NFL game, also the Houston Texans and the Indianapolis Colts. Philadelphia police are out looking for a mother the day after a man doing cleanup work outside a daycare center found a cardboard box on a sidewalk.
He heard some noises, some crying inside. He eventually opened it up and found that there was a very newborn infant inside that box.
Lieutenant Anthony McFadden, the little girl was just hours old, despite being left out in the cold, in good condition at the hospital. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
WVOX and WVIP HD2, New Rochelle.
Did you know the staff of life, bread, adds more sodium to the average American's diet than any other single food? And here's the reason. As a nation, we eat bread far more often than any other food. Sound Shore Medical Center encourages you to choose breads lower in salt. Remember, foods don't have to be salty to taste delicious, and less salt is healthier. And over time, your taste buds adjust to less being more.
Here's the updated weather forecast for today. This is the first day of winter. As winter officially arrived at 12:30 this morning, look for a mostly sunny, warm day. Normal highs around 45, or highs today between 50 and 55. For tonight, it's going to be cloudy, expecting rain to redevelop overnight. Nighttime lows chilly in the upper 30s. Looks like some rain in the morning hours on Friday, and it'll give way to some improving conditions during the afternoon with some clearing or highs for the day. It'll reach the middle 40s. But we also expect the possibility of a little mixed precipitation as the rain ends late morning, early afternoon on Friday. But generally a dry trend for later in the day. Friday night looks mostly cloudy. Might be a snow flurry or two, or overnight lows in the lower 30s. That early clouds on Saturday gives way to mostly sunny conditions. Highs will reach the lower 40s. And then on Christmas Day, Sunday, it'll be variably cloudy. Some sun, some clouds, temperatures in the lower 40s. Monday back to partly sunny and breezy, low 40s. And our extended outlook both Tuesday and Wednesday are looking fair, with temperatures 40 to 45 each day. Recapping for today, though, sunshine and warm for this first day of winter, back to a chance of rain tonight. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Recently, some people have had questions about the plants that generate our electricity here in New York. You have a right to know the facts about one of the most important providers of power to our area. Did you know that Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester, with virtually no emissions and at lower cost? Indian Point's operations are constantly reviewed to ensure safety by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's among the most thoroughly reviewed nuclear energy facilities in the country, and that there are multiple federal inspectors on site, and the law guarantees them access to any document, any employee, and any portion of the facility. That's accountability, every day, all the time. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point. and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
Cold enough for you?
All winter long.
It's freezing.
We're the hot spot on your radio.
It's hot.
WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Loebensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education and culture, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. And before we go any further, look out your window. This is the first day of winter. May all first days of winter from now until the rest of time be just like this one in the New York area. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, December 22nd, 2011, the first day of winter. Today is the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. Time of daylight is flat. We have lost less than a minute of daylight since yesterday, just 6 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. That's the way it goes at the solstices, the winter and the summer solstice. The amount of daylight per day is approximately equal within just a very seconds or very few minutes. The sun rose at 7:17 this morning. I can tell you that from personal experience. I was out there in the park jogging at 7:17, and I watched that glorious sun, red and orange, coming up from the horizon to the southeast. It will set at 4:31 this afternoon. We will have 9 hours and 14 minutes of daylight today. Again, that is the shortest day of the year. By contrast, on the summer solstice, which is the longest day of the year, we will have 15 hours and 7 minutes, almost 6 hours difference. The moon rose at 4:57 this morning. It will set at 2:38 tomorrow morning. We are 2 days short of the new moon. Next full phase is on January 9th. Next high tides in New Rochelle at 9:12 p.m. In Yonkers at 7:11 p.m. In Tarrytown, 7:55. Havistray, 21. And in Peekskill at 8:34 p.m. Now a regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Before we read these names, as you likely know by now, the war against Iraq is over, ending 1 week ago today. The last American soldier to die in Iraq was Specialist David Emanuel Hickman, age 23, from Greensboro, North Carolina. He was with the 82nd Airborne Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Baghdad on November 14th. The final count is about 4,500 American GIs lost their lives in that war. Those whom we honor today, Major Samuel M. Griffith, age 36, from Virginia Beach, Virginia. He was with the Marine Forces Reserve, killed in combat in Helmand Province on December 14th. Private Jalfred D. Vaccarano, age 20, of Apopka, Florida. He was with the 1st Armor, died on December 13th in Landstuhl, Germany, of injuries from small arms fire while deployed in Logar Province, Afghanistan. No date was given for his injuries. Specialist Ronald H. Wildrick, Jr., age 30, of Blairstown, New Jersey, with the 25th Infantry Division, one of two soldiers killed when attacked with a roadside bomb in Kunar Province on December 11th. These, of course, are all Afghanistan. The other killed in that same incident was Sergeant Christopher L. Munoz, age 24, of New Cuyama, California. I doubt that that's the way you pronounce it. C-U-Y-A-M-A, Cuyama, California, also with the 25th Infantry. And finally, Lance Corporal Christopher P.J. Levy, age 21, of Ramsur, North Carolina. He was with the 2nd Marines, died on December 10th of combat wounds sustained in Helmand Province on December 7th. He hung on for 3 days. Major Griffith was killed on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago, a reminder that we have troops in the field at this moment, and one or more can be dying right now. Even if they're not being killed, they might be in combat, forced to kill others, and to suffer great anxiety and fear for their lives and those of their comrades in arms. The other four American servicemen were killed in the days before our last broadcast. Please don't forget these men. You are Americans, as were they. They fought for all of us. You and I survived to enjoy the fruits of being American. They do not. You have the safety of a roof and walls, the comfort of warmth and food. Some of us have iPads. Most of us have computers. Do not take for granted gifts which others die for. Each of these deaths is a great loss to the families and to all Americans. May they live on forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Okay, time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, you can't disagree with me today. You can disagree with Sandra Prosnitz, who will tell us about her Alvin Ailey experience this last week.
Thank you, Bob. This is a review of last Sunday's matinee. The Alvin Ailey Dance Company, under its new director, Robert Battle, treated the audience to a varied and entertaining program. It started with Festa Barocca. Men and women in brightly colored costumes with long skirts writhed around to gorgeous music by Handel. The program notes describe the ballet as a festive party, but at the start, the dancers looked more as if they needed to escape some dreaded fate. As the ballet progressed, the mood lightened, until by the end, the dancers were playing with the audience. With its sinuous, flowing movements and lovely costumes, it was charming to watch, but left me a little dissatisfied. It neither told a story nor set a mood, so it was hard to understand. The second piece, The Hunt, with choreography by the new director, Robert Battle, was a virtuoso piece for six of the Ailey men. Preparing for a hunt, they whirled, jumped, and fell to the floor, psyching themselves up to face the danger and the excitement. The percussive score by Les Tambours du Bronx, while not what I would choose to listen to at home, was the perfect accompaniment for this exhilarating piece. The program ended, as many Ailey programs do, with Alvin Ailey's masterpiece, Revelations. This has been the company's signature piece since it was choreographed by Mr. Ailey in 1960, yet it is still fresh and as entertaining as ever. I've seen it many times and it still gives me goosebumps. The company performs it with emotional intensity, but at the same time, the dancing is precise and the movements perfect. The whole company is so good that it's almost unfair to single out any one dancer. But Sean A. Carman, Yannick Lebrun, and Kanji Zagawa in Cineman were exceptional. Their dancing was fast, precise, and deeply felt.
Okay, excellent. I guess you did enjoy it.
I did indeed.
And sometimes we enjoy things and we still find things wrong with them, but when was the last time we saw perfection in theater or in anything?
I think that's true. But dance has to be practically perfect to be enjoyable. You can go to a play and enjoy individual performances, even if you don't like the play terribly.
Right.
But I think dance is such a precise kind of art. The whole beauty of it comes from being absolutely right on the music and with the movements perfect. I think it's a very difficult art form to perform, and the Ailey is wonderful. I think they're far and away our best contemporary dance company.
Well, what if somebody falls on their butt in the middle of the performance? I mean, that's not perfection, but you probably enjoy that, right?
Well, in the Ailey, they could probably make it look like part of the dance.
Right. they make it look like part of the production, since it's modern dance rather than classical dance.
Right.
Very good. Thank you so much, Sandra. My guest today is Dr. John Fitzpatrick, Executive Director of the Cornell University Lab of Ornithology. Let me just say, Sandra not only reviews, but she's also quite a birder, so she may also have some questions for Mr. Fitzpatrick. Speaking to us from Utica, New York, welcome John Fitzpatrick.
Good morning, Bob. This is Ithaca.
What did I say, Utica?
Right. Okay. We're at the bottom end of the easternmost Big Finger Lake in Ithaca, New York.
Thank you for that correction. Let's see if I get the next thing right. You overlook the Sapsucker Woods.
I sure do. I'm looking at it right now. Okay. Well, it's a bit of a gray day, but with this the shortest day of the year, it's nice to imagine that the slow onset of spring is beginning.
Yeah, you know, I like the way you put that, because whenever a season begins, either at a solstice or at an equinox, the sun is doing something that is heading towards the next thing. So right now, the ecliptic of the sun is just at today, at some point today, is touching its furthest south and beginning its northern travel. And the next event will be the spring, the vernal equinox, as it crosses the equator, as we all know.
Right, and by that point, of course, birds across the entire Western Hemisphere will have hormones coursing through their veins, and a lot of them will be actually on their way north already at that moment.
Now, I was going to ask you about the weather in Utica, but since you're actually in Ithaca, how is the weather in Ithaca today? You said it's a little bit gray, but is it warm like it is down
here?
Yeah,
it's gray. We're in this sort of frontal boundary zone here. That's not very cold. Still no snow on the ground, although I think we're expecting some tonight, tomorrow.
Okay, now we're going to get into birds, of course. We have less than a minute before the break, so let me just ask you about Mr. Charles F. Feeney. In fact, we're so close to the break that just think about that. That'll be my first guest, my first question.
I look forward to talking about it.
Yeah, Mr. Feeney actually donated $350 million, which put Cornell over the hump as far as getting the facility on Roosevelt Island in Manhattan. But we'll talk about that in just a minute. You are listening to Environmentally Sound AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Florianapolis or Sao Paulo, Brazil, Kokomo, Indiana, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, Leonia or Buttsville, New Jersey.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD2.
From the Fox Business Network, Wall Street on the rise as investors digest the latest round of news on the U.S. economy. The University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index rose more than expected this month, and just past 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 35 points. Initial jobless claims fell to the lowest level since April 2008. 364,000 people filed for first-time benefits in the latest week. It marks the third straight week claims have fallen below the 400,000 mark. The U.S. economy expanded at a slower-than-expected pace over the summer. The final reading for third quarter GDP was revised lower to 1.8%. That was due in part to a sharp drop in healthcare spending. Economists estimate stronger growth in the fourth quarter. And Yahoo is getting a boost on word it may sell a majority of its Asian assets. The tech giant is reportedly considering a deal to cut its 40% stake in Chinese e-commerce company Alibaba Group. Yahoo may also unload its entire stake in Yahoo Japan. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Robert Gray.
8 hours is a long time, especially when your child has a fever. That's why you should use Children's Advil. It can relieve your child's fever for up to 8 hours with just one dose. In fact, nothing works longer than Children's Advil. And the medicine in Children's Advil is the number one pediatrician-recommended children's fever reducer. So when your child has a fever, provide them with relief that will last up to 8 hours with just one dose. Children's Advil, the 8-hour fever reliever.
Among OTC pain relievers, use as directed.
The winter weather is harsh.
Good heavens, what a terrible curse.
Keep warm with a hot spot on your radio.
Very hot.
VOX.
The voice of Westchester. WVOX.
Okay, we are back. I was cut off in the middle of my list, so let me just finish. If you are listening in Leonia or Buttsville, New Jersey, or Buttstown, Pennsylvania, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You're listening live. Also, if you are repairing Land Rovers in Lower Manhattan on 9th Avenue, 10th Avenue, wherever that is, you've also logged on onto your smartphone. Okay. John Fitzpatrick, welcome back.
Great to be here.
Okay. Now, I want to ask you about this donation of $350 million, what it means to Cornell University, what it means to New York City, because it's a big tech center on Roosevelt Island. And tell us just a little bit about Feeney and his previous
donations. Well, I just will say, if you any listener who has never heard of Charles Feeney, it would be worth a quick Google to read his account on Wikipedia. Really remarkable individual who helped found the duty-free enterprises in which he made his wealth. But he's been generous through his entire career and has basically a very simple personal philosophy of life, which is work hard, not to get rich, but to do good things. And he has certainly done that for Cornell University through his career, along with a bunch of other places around the world, especially Ireland.
He's actually given $950 million overall to Cornell, which is $50 million short of $1 billion.
Right.
And that's just Cornell.
Obviously, he's made an enormous difference for Cornell University through the last several decades. I will mention that my own job here at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology is endowed from from gifts that were produced in part as a challenge by Mr. Feeney.
So does he have huge statues and plaques and buildings named after him?
No, not at all. He actually does not seek the limelight. In fact, a very large proportion of his gifts are done anonymously. And over the years, of course, it began to leak out who this was. But no, not at all. He's just trying to do good. And he has certainly done that with this phenomenal and unexpectedly large gift to give a boost to the Cornell Tech campus that will be on Roosevelt Island. That's a monumental advance for Cornell University and for the city of New York, frankly. So yeah. It will bring functionally applications from Silicon Valley here to the East Coast.
Yeah, and, New York is becoming a big tech center now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will mention that we, even at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, will be beneficiaries of this. We are doing increasingly a lot of work with very large data sets. Huge data science is here to stay, and what we're doing is analyzing bird distributions globally using advanced computer technology that is produced by people who work at places like this.
Interesting. Let me just ask you a question out of curiosity: Is Charles Feeney a religious man? Does he do this in the name of religion, or is he a secular fellow?
I've never heard of any mention of religion in any of his gifts or anything about him. He's really interested in doing good for humanity.
So he's very different from Tim.
Every one of us ought to be worshiping that. That's for sure.
Well, yeah, he's very different than from Tim Tebow, the Denver Broncos football team, who wears his Christianity on his sleeve while he's winning football games. Very different from that.
Right.
Okay. I didn't expect a big response. Okay. Let's get into some birds now. That's something that you know probably as well as or better than almost anybody in the world. First of all, I was very intrigued at looking at your website with the Macaulay Library. There's an amazing collection of bird and animal sounds.
Absolutely recorded. Amazing. It's the largest in the world.
And it's recorded in the field.
A phenomenal proportion of them can now be browsed there online at the Macaulay Library.
And I looked at some on my computer yesterday. I had any bird I could think of, I was able to go there and get sometimes several recordings of the bird actually recorded in the field. By someone who knew what they were doing with good equipment.
That's correct. We have almost 80% of the world's bird species in the collection right now, and we're gaining on that remaining 20% of every year. And again, we're working hard to get every single cut that we have digitized and up on the web so that people can enjoy and learn from them.
Yeah.
And then we make these sounds available in various formats for applications in research or even in commercial things. Listeners might enjoy knowing that Harry Potter movies and all of Lucas's films make heavy use of the sounds from the Macaulay Library.
Well, why wouldn't we? Now it's the Macaulay, M-A-C-A-U-L-A-Y Library.
Correct. Three A's. Mm-hmm.
Right. And anybody who just Googles Macaulay Library instantly has access to this whole library. All of these
sounds. That's right. You can listen to any bird sound you want. You can listen to numbers of them. And you also now we have about 40,000 video clips that are available now for people to watch bird behavior around the world.
Fascinating. But you also have animals. And I was a little disappointed when I looked up the squirrel and I listened to him. You had him kind of clacking a line, but you didn't have a recording of when they get agitated and they go, Yeah. But they scream a little bit.
That's interesting that we don't have that sound. I just heard it this morning in my yard.
Yeah. But, I mean, sometimes they actually scream. It's, it sounds almost like a bird. I always thought it was a bird until I looked up and there was a squirrel.
Yeah. Well, your point about missing sounds is absolutely true. We are constantly acquiring new ones, even from backyard birds and mammals. So it's a... Because, after all, the full repertoire of the bird and mammal world out there is enormous, and so we're constantly trying to get it more complete.
Okay, so let's just start talking about your work, not just about the birds themselves, but what you do. You're a conservationist, and you are trying to, through science, through studying birds and through habitat, you're actually trying to save habitat.
World.
To save the world, yes.
Yeah.
Tell us
That's
a little
right.
bit about
fact,
that. We're going to be cut off by our break, but start telling, and then we'll continue
yeah,
after
well,
that.
Well, I think birds, the most important thing to understand first is that birds are nature's most evocative windows into the natural world. They call on us, they sing, they dance, they fly, they migrate, they're beautiful. And so we have a lot to learn by watching birds, and they make it pretty easy for us to do that.
Okay, let's hold it right there, and we have plenty of time left, so we'll come back right after the break. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle. This is Bob Lebensold for Environmentally Sound. My guest today is John Fitzpatrick. My guest reviewer is Sandra Prosnitz, who remains in the studio. And if you're listening in Hooker, Bowlegs, Cookie Town, OK, Happy Lander, Oklahoma, Beaver, Boring, Idiotville, Zigzag, Oregon, or Big Beaver, Pennsylvania, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and we will be right back.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. One Democratic senator says he gets it.
This is not a holiday hit. This is not a movie most Americans want to watch. This is, in fact, the worst way to finish the year.
Chris Coons of Delaware talking about the congressional impasse over how and how long to extend the expiring payroll tax break.
A 2-month extension only perpetuates the uncertainty that too many employers already have. In dealing with the economy and what's coming out of Washington.
House Speaker John Boehner and President Obama speaks in the next couple hours. The Pentagon blames misunderstandings for the NATO attack last month that killed 24 troops from Pakistan.
We further express sincere condolences to the Pakistani people, to the Pakistani government, and most importantly to the families of the Pakistani soldiers who were killed or wounded.
Defense Department spokesman George Little. Fox News. We report... You decide.
Now in Westchester, for corporate travel, executive transportation, and custom limousine service, the leader, clearly, is Excel. After 2 decades in the county, Rich Guberti's Excel Transportation Service does just that. Specializing in sedans, limos, and 14-passenger vans, Excel is the new class of the fleet and the Westchester leader in terms of cars, service, resources, and the quality of their Excel drivers. Most of the Golden Apple's blue-chip companies have, in fact, in recent years, switched to Excel for local transportation and city-to-city service to Washington, Albany, Baltimore, Hartford, Boston, and Philadelphia at rates even less than rail or air. And you can use them too for a trip into town, the airport, or any special occasion. Call President Rich Guberti at Excel Headquarters, EXCEL Transportation, 576-9797, 914-576-9797. These days in Westchester, the new car service leader, because Excel excels. 576-9797.
This is an unsolicited testimonial, call it a commercial if you will, about a brilliant, dedicated young Mexican fellow. His name is Jesus Valencia, but he's one of the brightest, smartest, and hardest working tradesmen we've encountered. And especially what he does better than anyone we've found is roofing. He's like a Nureyev up there on the roof. He goes right to the problem and he fixes it permanently for a lot less than the big-time roofing companies charge you. Jesus Valencia is his name. He's the best we've found in years at doing this. His number in Westchester for all kinds of roofing matters is 914-576-5596. I tell you, only the guy is really good. So I represent young Mr. Valencia to you only as a roofer who's bright and will work hard to fix up your roof. 576-5596.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
As your weather forecast on this Thursday, look for skies to be mostly sunny. High temperatures for the day range between 50 and 55 degrees, well above normal for the day. Clouding up, though, quickly. Later today and tonight, we expect some rain overnight. Nighttime lows in the upper 30s. Some periods of rain in the morning hours on Friday. As it ends, it may mix with a little bit of sleet or even some wet snow in some spots, especially off to the north. Temperatures for the day tomorrow ranging into the middle 40s. We're expecting some clearing, though, mid-afternoon Friday. And on Saturday, some early clouds, then becoming mostly sunny in the lower 40s. Christmas Day, Sunday, mostly cloudy, highs in the lower 40s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Spring's warmth is coming, but in the meantime,
stay in your home
and feel the heat from your radio. VOX.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
We are back. We are speaking with John Fitzpatrick, the executive director of the Cornell Bird Ornithology Laboratory. I'm not sure the exact terminology. It's the
Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Cornell Lab of Ornithology. It's a very prestigious organization, and they also they don't just study birds. Birds is the primary focus, but also animals. And I think, John, you told me that sometimes you focus on marquee species, charismatic
right.
animals. And what's the reason for that?
Well, birds are certainly nature's premier marquee animals, or they're most easily accessed window into how nature works. They're great tools for scientific research. They're also very sensitive indicators of environmental health and variation. They're great teachers for us, and they're inspirations for us. So they have a lot of things going for them, but they're not the only things in the world that do that. In fact, we have our very largest research program here at the Lab of Ornithology is on whales, actually.
Now, they're not birds, are they?
It's in our bioacoustics program group. So these are very smart people who are building ingenious ways to listen to the world, and they're even doing it under the surface of the sea so that they're hearing how marine mammals communicate with one another and using that for conservation purposes.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so now you were talking about conservation. We always hear about habitat destruction and how that drives species towards extinction, including our own, I might add. You've done a lot of work. You're on the board of the Nature Conservancy. Tell us about your conservation efforts.
Sure. Well, I think birds are, again, signature players in the effort to try to save wild places and natural systems. Still, they inspire us to do that. They also teach us what's working and what isn't. As you know, we've lost a few. The most iconic extinction probably in the history of the planet was the disappearance of the passenger pigeon, which at one point was the most abundant bird on the planet, and we took them all, and proceeded then to take all of the Eskimo curlews that were flocking up the prairie states during the spring after the passenger pigeons were gone.
Now, were they
they taught us that we actually ought to try to imagine a life in which we live side by side with natural systems, that we take care of our natural resources so that we can enjoy them and use them for hundreds or thousands or millions of years instead of use them up.
Now, okay, well, we disagree there because we don't have hundreds of thousands or millions of years left. We will be extinct in just a few years, but we'll discuss our difference of your glass. Uh-huh. Your glass is three quarters full. Mine is nine tenths empty, but we can bandy that about. But we hear about the dodo, for instance. The dodo, to me, is the quintessential extinction. But those birds, I believe, were killed for food. What about passenger pigeons and Eskimo curlews? Were they killed
also also killed for food? They were. Those were enormous flocks, and in the case of the passenger pigeon, they bred in very dense, enormous colonies of hundreds of millions of birds in a colony. Oh. You know, taking up a county's worth of forest in Michigan or western Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And so the market hunters that prevailed in the late 1800s could go into those places and literally slaughter them by the tens to hundreds of millions. And remember that this is a period in which the railroad had just been invented and the steam engine was now available. And so what they did was literally put railroad tracks up into these colonies and ship railroad cars full of passenger pigeons to the New York and Boston markets to eat. So it was actually an industry that proliferated in the late 1800s, much to the chagrin of a few conservation-minded people, but that was a period in which that was still really not thought about. I will just say that we still have to ask the question today, have we changed? Right now, we're at risk, I think, globally, of doing the same thing to bluefin tunas and other members of the ocean community. So we have to use the lessons of the past and try to change our behavior of the future. And I think we're beginning to do that. We're not going to bring back the passenger pigeon. Eden is gone, but we can actually learn as a species. And my sense is that there is a turnabout beginning to happen in almost every culture of the world, even in places like China where economic development is been on, of course, a rampage over the last few years. But even in China, there are growing cries among the Chinese organizations to be thinking more about conservation of natural resources and protection of species.
So you don't think
it's too late? Our behavior is changing.
You don't think it's too late?
No, it's not too late. It's it's too late to save some of the things that are gone. The dodo, bless its heart, was a great big flightless bird that had no predators on that island of Mauritius, and so when sailors came there, they took them all.
They ate them, yeah.
Same thing with the elephant bird in Madagascar and the moas in New Zealand and so on. So we're not going to bring those back. But I think the key is that we can learn from our mistakes. We can communicate across cultures and across great divides that exist about the wonders of the natural world and how much the natural world actually does mean to humans, not just aesthetically, but actually functionally.
Well,
nature provides all these services, and we're actively in the process of learning what those are.
I think, forgive me, I don't mean this pejoratively, but I think you're in a bit of an ivory tower. There are people down here who could care less about any species or anything but us, and they read the Bible to say we are the stewards of the earth and we can do anything we damn please with it.
Yeah, interesting you should bring up the Bible and people who could care less. There are actually an increasing number of religious organizations that are actively interpreting pieces of the Bible as saying it's our responsibility to save God's creations, not to use them up, that they were put on this earth for the purpose of living side by side with us, not for the purpose of feeding us until they're gone. So there are indeed many religious groups that take very seriously the call of the spiritual call of the natural world to be that we should be guarding it, not using it.
Well,
as for people who couldn't care less, I've dealt with many of them. I try to spend as little time as I can in any ivory tower, And I've actually been out on the ground with captains of industry and people whose job it is to use the land up and talked with them personally about these stories. And it's really telling the stories personally to individuals that makes people recognize there are choices we can make. We can, in fact, continue to have economic development, but do it in a way that plans for the continued functioning of natural systems as well.
Well, I would very,
and
I would
once again not to just to put the final point on that. Birds, the key is that birds are really good at telling us how we're doing at that.
Okay, I would I will gladly shake your hand in Macy's window at some time in the future if you are proven right and if things turn around. I hope you are right.
Well, remember, it's a process. There won't ever be a point at which we've solved the problem. But earlier you were talking about excellence, right, and how difficult it is to achieve it on stage.
Perfect.
But that doesn't mean we don't strive for it.
True.
And so trying to get what everything done that we can possibly get done, that's what it's about. And so we'll be doing that, in my view, over the next 100 years, 1,000 years, million years.
No, we don't have that much
unless
time
unless and until a virus comes in and uses up the humans, and then, of course, the natural world will then take over again. But
that's right.
Right now, we have to recognize that at 7 billion and counting, humans own and manage the Earth.
We are the vermin of the Earth.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people who view us that way. I don't think of ourselves as vermin, but I do regularly talk about and write about the fact that we have to acknowledge that we own and manage this earth at this point. So, when any owner and managers of anything, whether it's a house or a checking account or a business, know that you have to be careful and steward it and manage it and think about it and plan about it in order to do it well. And that's what we're, I think, increasingly beginning to do.
Okay, we're going to get to another break. We have about another 8 minutes when we come back. Please stand
Great.
By. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening anywhere outside of our listening area, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. I am Bob Lebensold. My guest is John Fitzpatrick. My reviewing guest is Sandra Prosnitz, and we will be right back.
And national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. In the payroll tax cut fight, both sides digging in. House Republicans insisting that a two-month-long extension passed in the Senate is not enough.
One big reason why we need to do a full year, and that's jobs. A one-year bill, like the president requested and like the House produced, is simply better for jobs and better for our economy.
House Speaker John Boehner speaking to reporters this morning, the White House turning up the pressure by asking people to comment on Twitter on how their lives would be affected if Congress lets the cuts expire. The U.S. conceding mistakes in connection with a NATO attack that left 24 Pakistani troops dead.
Maps with different grids, poor communication, and a general air of mistrust led NATO forces to mistake gunmen at two Pakistani border posts for insurgents.
Fox Radio's Alistair Wanklin. And another record low for 30-year fixed mortgages, now down to 3.91%. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower-cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point? I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
This is Kevin Gallagher. I've lived in our beloved Westchester County now for 55 years.
most of them right here in the Neuchâtel, Larchmont, and Mamaroneck area. That's my home turf. And after a long career in banking, I'm very pleased to have begun an exciting new opportunity with the well-known and highly respected Weichert Realtors. During my financial years, I dealt with the great folks at Weichert here in the county and came to have tremendous regard for their skill at buying and selling homes, their integrity, their unique knowledge, and their reputation in the competitive real estate market. So I'm glad to be associated with these nice people. I'm now at the Weichert office on the Post Road in Larchmont these days, and I'd be glad to help you list your home or to find a brand new one. Please give me a call to discuss residential opportunities all over Westchester. 914-833-0800, extension 200. And if a good-looking Irishman answers, that's me, Kevin John Gallagher, Weichert in Larchmont, 833-0800, extension 200.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Jim Caloran, John Verney, Michael Brown, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Anything you'd like to say to Old Man Winter? Well, till he leaves, we'll turn up the heat. VOX.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with John Fitzpatrick, the executive director of the Cornell University Ornithology Lab. John, a couple of things I want to make sure I ask you. First of all, in 2005, now I mentioned the year, you probably already know the question, the ivory-billed woodpecker was thought to have been rediscovered after being declared extinct, and you were in Washington at the time. I saw you online, of course. I saw you on the podium with some senators, and it seemed like a very big deal. What was the outcome of all that?
Right. Actually, the bird had never actually been declared extinct, although there was suspicion of that for a number of decades. The outcome was that we did organize between 2005 and 2009 a very detailed, comprehensive search with a number of teams in a number of states, public and private entities throughout the southeastern U.S., specifically to find any evidence for breeding pairs. And short story is we found none. The trail went cold there in eastern Arkansas in 2005. We have strong evidence that a single individual was there, a male, during the 2004-2005 period. But I have to say that I've actually heard even more recently some evidence that makes us think this is not worth giving up yet. And I think the jury is still out on whether there are any left. It doesn't look good, that's for sure, because we've now done a pretty detailed, comprehensive search in lots of the most likely places. If I had to put my money on it still living anywhere, I'd still go back to that 1,000 square miles of forest in eastern Arkansas along the Mississippi River.
Okay, now, if there was one male, is there any chance that he would interbreed with a closely related species? Because there are closely related species.
Right. No, there isn't. Woodpeckers in general don't hybridize much at all, even closely related species as that we know around the U.S., actually around the world.
Okay.
Pretty rare to find hybrid woodpeckers, and the ivory bill actually belongs to a group of woodpeckers that is tropical mainly. So its closest living relative at this point is down in Central America.
Okay. All right. Now, one thing we just must get to is the use of tools by birds. The use of tools. Now, the use of tools is one indicator of, for lack of a better word, sophistication of a species or intelligence, let's say. Now, I personally have observed for years the gulls down by the shore carrying shellfish aloft, oysters, clams,
right,
whatever, and dropping them on the pavement. Now, that's clearly a use of tools. But there are some others. Why don't you tell us about some others, and especially the green heron, for goodness sakes.
Sure, yeah. There are actually around the world an increasing number of birds known to use tools, and by tool use we mean actually using a substance specifically to accomplish something that substance wasn't made for. In your case, the pavement really wasn't created as a device for cracking open oysters. In the case of the green heron in southern Florida, there are some great films of these individuals using scavenging pieces of bread from picnic tables and taking them to the edge of a stream or a pond, dropping them in, and they have no interest in eating the bread. They're actually waiting for the fish to come by to eat the bread. They'll grab the fish, eat the fish, pick the bread up, and go to a different spot and do the same thing.
Now, this is the
green... They're actually using the bread as a tool for luring minnows in to become food.
This is the green heron.
Green heron, that's right.
And it actually...
widespread heron across North America.
Well, I've seen them up right up here in New Rochelle.
Yeah, sure. They breed right here at Sapsucker Woods Pond, actually.
Interesting. So they... Now I'm just going to repeat this because I found it so incredible. Maybe our listeners missed that. They actually take the bread that is... people are feeding them, but it's not the bread that they use for food. They use it as bait to fish for minnows. And then after they've caught the minnow, they reuse the bread, which is a...
They reuse the bread, right. Uh-huh. So they take it to another spot. Now, there are other groups of birds around the world that do tools. One of the famous examples that Darwin himself observed was at one of the finches on the Galapagos Islands, the cactus finch that actually picks off cactus spines and uses those spines to probe into crevices and holes in branches to bring out insects. So it's actually using the spine as a probe, and we'll reuse those spines. This is the kind of behavior that crows in various parts of the world also use. So the idea of fashioning something out of a piece of natural material and then using it as a tool is actually exists all over the world.
Now
birds are amazingly smart.
You're speaking of the New Caledonian crow, I gather.
The New Caledonian crow is a famous example, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the bird somewhere in Indonesia? I think that tosses nuts into traffic.
Waiting for the traffic patterns to stop. Throws the nuts out there. Cars go by, crack the nut. Bird waits for the traffic to disappear and then goes out there and eats the nut.
So it's using vehicles as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
Right.
That is fascinating.
Yep. Birds are amazingly smart at being able to do what they have to do to stay alive. I'll give you one other example of this kind of intelligence. The bird that I study, actually, the Florida scrub jay.
Acorulescence. Florida. Acorulescence, right?
Hmm?
Acorulescence.
Yes, Aphalacoma cerulescens.
Aphalacoma cerulescens.
Yeah. It's a crestless jay that's unique to the peninsula of Florida, lives in beautiful, ancient elfin oak woodlands, and this bird forages on insects most of the year, but in Florida, in the middle of the winter, the insects get rare, and what it does during the fall is harvest acorns from its territory, and each individual will store 6,000 to 8,000 acorns during the fall.
Really?
All around its 30-acre territory, and then during the course of the winter, will proceed to unbury those acorns and eat them.
Well, the squirrels must hate them.
So we can remember, out in the scrub, there aren't actually very many squirrels.
Okay.
The Florida scrub jays are the sort of the king of the acorn world out there in central Florida. But they remember across a 30-acre territory where they've stored these individual things one by one.
Well,
they do much better at tests about this than any human being that's ever been put to the same test.
And
they have amazing spatial memory.
And squirrels, too. Squirrels can't find nuts that well, either.
Right. What squirrels do, though, is they have a smaller number of places where they put them.
Uh-huh.
You know who else does it right here in our own backyards is the chickadee.
The black-capped chickadee?
Does,
oh, really?
Does some of this hoarding and caching of food. So when you see in the fall, especially, a chickadee coming and going, or a flock of chickadees coming and going from your feeder, many of those birds are going off with their seed into the woods and actually caching that seed for use during some horrible winter day when the snow is flying.
Excellent. Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left, so let me just ask you about the scrub jay some more. They're separate. Their habitat has been wreaked havoc with, but there are still some separate enclaves which are not connected. So since they're not connected, we can expect and, in fact, have observed some independent evolution. Tell us a little bit about that and how they've evolved differently in their different enclaves from the very same species.
Yeah, that's interesting. We've actually studied that in some detail. The bird, as I said, is limited to the peninsula of Florida, where 97% of its habitat is now gone. So the bird is on the endangered species list, and it is declining. But we've also done genetic surveys of these birds across the state, and shown that even in the original pre-human settlement condition, there were different areas of separate genetic isolation in the state. And so there are actually now, we've shown about 14 separate genetic units of Florida scrub jays.
Okay, now
and we can see some of the differences between those, even looking at them today. They have some different sounds.
Yes.
They also, the juvenile plumage looks a little different depending on where you are around the state.
Okay, now look, we're going to have to cut very soon. So why don't you just give us an example of the call of the female scrub jay, Florida scrub jay, in two different locations?
Really good question. The female Florida scrub jay makes a territorial call, and in central Florida where we study it, it sounds like this. And down in the southwestern part of the state, over by the Fort Myers area, it sounds like this. Much more mute sounding. And then over in the eastern part of the state, they sound more like a machine gun rattle.
Same species, basically.
Same
although,
species, yep.
Now they're slightly
different populations. Yeah. And all of these are given at territorial boundary disputes. And they're basically saying, because these birds mate for life and live on their territories, and the female is saying, I see an enemy, go get him. I see an enemy, go get him.
Really? That's how you recognize it. Okay, John Fitzpatrick, we have to leave you now. It's fascinating. There's so many more questions I wanted to ask you about Cornell and about birds, but alas, time marches.
So well, maybe another time.
Maybe another
time. Great talking with you, and I hope your listeners get out there and enjoy the birds. Right. And definitely do the Great Backyard Bird Count in February. You can look for that on Google and find count birds wherever you are.
Okay, thank you so much, John. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I'd like to thank John Fitzpatrick for taking the time to visit with us today. Always nice to have an optimist on board. Almost makes me believe. When the Congress stops being a band of corrupt, greedy shills for industry, perhaps I will get a little hopeful. Our thought for the week, fly like a bird. Better hurry, though. If you are the wrong species, you just may become extinct before very long. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the U.S. of A. Next up is supposed to be Howard Sturman. I don't see him. Thanks to Bill O'Shaughnessy for all you do and Don Stevens. I am Bob Leventhal, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.